Hello, everybody, and welcome to another book review. This week, we're going to change the format up slightly. And so normally, I'd review two brand new books and an older book. But this week, we're going to review four new books. That's because three of them are relatively thin. Therefore, you know, you can go through them relatively quickly compared to, obviously, the thicker, heavier books that are normally on these reviews. So just before we start, a couple of things. One quick shout out to the World of Warships Cruisers book, which is currently doing its campaign for its second reprint. You've seen me review it on a previous video, so there's a link in the description down below if you want to pick yourself a copy of that. And secondly, other bit of due diligence, the first three, the small books, I was sent by Osprey, so I got those for free, which is nice. I'm not under any obligation to say anything particularly positive or negative either way on them, so it is still my opinion, but obviously, yeah, I have been sent these books free, so take that as you will. So the first one is this one, Italian Mars and MS Boats, 1915 to 1949, by Enrico Sanucci. So you may have seen one or two of his books on previous reviews that I've done. And he is a well-known Italian historian, and I have pretty high hopes for the book going into it, which, yeah, could be good or bad, because obviously if you have high hopes going in, you can only either be vindicated or disappointed. You can't be pleasantly surprised, but, you know, he's a good enough author. I can expect that. So when I read through the book, it is actually a very interesting book. It's the smallest of the books. We're going up in size order. As you can see, it's part of, what is it, the New Vanguard series. And probably recognize it by the green covering. But despite the fact that it's a relatively small book, it does go into a fair bit of useful detail, and I'm very happy with some of the features. So one of the first things it does, obviously, is go into, you know, how exactly did the Italians end up with these Mars boats in the first place? And it covers a bit of that history, which most sources, especially very much online sources, don't cover. So interesting factoid, the Mars boats only really came into existence because of shortages of material caused in the First World War. Originally, the Italians wanted to build more small steel-hulled torpedo boats, much as, you know, the predecessors to destroyers had been. However, because there was a shortage of a particular kind of steel that you could put bolts through without the whole thing failing spectacularly, they said, okay, well, look, we've got this thriving wooden motorboat industry. How about we use that instead? And that was the origin of the Mars boats. It then goes through the Mars boats specifications and their operational history in World War One. And one thing I'm really, really happy to see, and those of you who, you know, have been around for a little bit longer, like myself, will recognize this kind of feature from old school history books, the good old color profiles. I'll bring that back into focus a minute. These things are fantastic, in my opinion, and not enough books include them. But this one does in several places, actually. So those were the World War One standard Mars boats. Also goes into some of the opposition, if you like. So some of the alternatives that various other navies, particularly obviously World War One, the Austro-Hungarian Navy, were using. There's some nice digital renditions, for example, of the sinking of the Svend Istvan. Then by page 15, you're going on into interwar developments, which is both how the Mars boats of World War One evolved into the Mars boats of World War Two, along with some interesting dead ends, more of the model side profiles. There's also a rather nice cutaway showing you exactly how a World War Two era Mars boat actually worked, all with items on the key as well. You've got specification tables throughout, which is really handy. And then you get into World War Two and the various operations that they undertake there. Now, as well as a good summary of what's going on during World War II in terms of Mars boat operations and various other digital renditions and some photos and stuff, one of the other things that I really, really like is this thing. Here we go. Now, that, and hopefully there'll be some supplementary pictures appearing in a bit more clarity, is one of several tables which basically summarize each area campaign that the Mars boats took part in and all the engagements that the Mars boats took part in, which is often very difficult to actually track down. So for example, in the Sicilian campaign, we have on the 14th, 15th of July, so that'd be a night engagement, you have the location, Reggio Calabria, the attackers, five Schnellboote, S-53 and 151. And then you have the defenders, so there's four MTBs, and well that's all it tells you in the summation table. But you can get some idea of what's going on specifically when you look at the little keys next to it. So, for example, you'll see, again, hopefully on the picture, that if the boat has a plus symbol next to it, it was sunk. If it has a hashtag next to it, it was damaged. And if it has a degrees symbol or a small circle, then it was untouched. So you get some idea of how the engagement went. So, for example, let's have a look. You've got the 25th of April in the Tunisian campaign. This is on the 25th of April, 1943, I should add. Cape Blanc, you have three Italian Mars boats, all of which are untouched, MS-22, MS-25, and Mars-552, engaging a variety of MTBs, also untouched. So that was, you know, fairly inconclusive. Whereas a couple of days earlier, you had 640 and 644 at the Canny Rocks engaging, so this is British MTBs, engaging MS-22 and MS-25. And in that case, both sides lost one boat. So that's a very handy guide to all the engagements the Mars boats took place in. Obviously, a lot of them are further explained in the text, and it means you have somewhere to go to actually find out what's going on in more detail. And then there's a short analysis and conclusion, a short bibliography, and an index, which is quite nice. Got a little book of 48 pages up to and including the index. So definitely worth picking up. Our next candidate, this one I was rather interested in how they're going to pull it off, because this is, I believe it's, yes, 80 pages. US Liberty Ships versus German Surface Raiders, Battle of the Atlantic, 1942. Now, the reason I was rather interested how they're going to pull this off is because, well, as I said, it's 80 pages, so I can immediately tell it's somewhat thicker than the Mars boat one. So this is the one of the dual series by Mark Lardass. And I thought to myself, well, when you're talking about German surface raiders, specifically the Hilfskreuzer versus Liberty ships, those engagements don't tend to last very long. You know, one way or the other, somebody is going to catch fire and explode pretty quickly. So how are you going to turn that into 80 pages? Well, it turns out that they do it pretty well. Now, a lot of you will be wondering, is the Stephen Hopkins in there? Yes, of course, the Stephen Hopkins is in there. That's kind of the central piece. But I was actually very impressed in how they pulled off turning this into an 80-page book. So you've got chronology, charting all the ships that were involved, you know, when they were built, when they were launched, when they were, in the German's case, turned into various Hilfskreuzer. You've then got a design and development section, which talks about the history of armed merchantmen, the history of German surface raiders, so German merchantmen turned into surface raiders, some specifications on specific ones, so the Stier, which is, of course, the one that would fight the Stephen Hopkins, as well as the Michael, which is also involved in 42. Then there's a rather in-depth section on the design of US merchant shipping and wartime emergency designs, plus profiles on the particular combatants in these engagements. So the Stephen Hopkins, of course, is included. Then there's a whole section on the strategic situation, why the Germans were sending out raiders. There's a rather handy map showing the various raiders and their engagements that will be being referred to. Then you have the technical specifications. So previously, it was kind of the general history with some side panels showing general specs. But then in the technical specs, you've got specific details on exactly what kind of weaponry the Hilfskreuzer are using, where they're sighted, what the capabilities of those weapons are, and then a section doing the same thing for the Liberty ships and the various other US ships that are going to be involved in these actions. And then you get on to the actual action. So you have the crew profiles and then the combats. So we have the, in 1942, engagements between the Starnberg Calcutta and the Stier, the George Clymer versus both the Michael and the Esau. And there's some nice 3D renderings again. And then, of course, the Stephen Hopkins versus the Stier. That's the one that where the Stier gets sunk by the Liberty ship, and while the Liberty ship also gets sunk. And then there is a statistics and analysis section and an aftermath. So summarizing essentially what's gone on. So it's actually quite compelling reading. There is a further reading kind of further reading bibliography section, and of course an index as well. So although obviously it doesn't cover all the German surface raiders and it doesn't cover all the merchant ships that fought them, because it's only focusing on the Atlantic in 1942, as the title says, it is quite a nice, you know, slice of what was going on in the surface raider world at that time. Definitely can recommend that. Then we have this one. This is part of the Fleet series, and this is the French Navy 1939-42, the Marine Nationale in World War II by Hugh Canuel. I think that's how you pronounce it. Now, this is a rather interesting one because, of course, the Marine Nationale often gets overlooked somewhat in World War II. Well, obviously, as the Marine Nationale under the starting out French government, they're not involved in the war for all that long because, well, the French surrender. But then you have the French fleet under Vichy and the Free French fleet operating, obviously, on opposite sides, realistically speaking. Officially, Vichy France is neutral. Practically speaking, they're far more pro-Axis than they are pro-Allied. But the Marine Nationale prior to that does get up to a few fairly interesting and hard-fought campaigns, which I have covered in part on the channel. So this one starts off with talking about, very briefly, the Great War experience, what the Marine Nationale experienced during World War One, then how it evolved during the interwar period. And very quickly, we go on to describing the various ships in the fleet. So obviously, it's not an in-depth description of every single ship possible, but it goes over the battleships, the cruisers, etc. And one of the really handy things, again, I do love a table. There's multiple tables. So this table, as you can probably tell, is the World War II French battleships. So you've got the Corbeils, the Britannias, the Dunkirks, and the Richelieus, and you've got their displacement dimensions, design speed, armament, armor, and what happened to them. And then you go down through heavy cruisers and light cruisers, and here it's divided up into classes again. Although each class obviously only has its standard stats, and then you've got the ship's names at the end. You've got the same thing for destroyers, and there's no table for submarines, which is a little bit unfortunate, but given the rest of them, but there you go. Got some various technical factors. Then you've got a rather interesting thing of how the Marine Nationale actually operates. So how they are controlled from the top down, their structure, how they have used their intel services, a rather interesting world map showing the various French possessions and therefore where the Marine Nationale needed to be committed during the Second World War, logistics, the fleet disposition. And then 46 pages in, so just over halfway through, we get to the actual combat section. So initially we have the portion where the Marine Nationale is whole under the starting French government in World War II, the Norway campaign, various operations in the North Sea, the Channel, the Mediterranean, the Dunkirk evacuation, how the Marine Nationale copes with Blitzkrieg. Then you get on to the fall of France and the formation of the Vichy government. You've got a box out for the Free French naval forces, and then moves on to the Vichy fleet. And of course, it does cover Operation Catapult and the attack on Moselle Kibir and things like that, which is done pretty well, I would say. Obviously, written by a French author, is going to be from a French perspective. There are a few minor points in the description of Moselle Kibir that I personally would quibble with, but that's not to denigrate the book or the author. This falls well within the scope of professional disagreement between historians. And as I say, it's still a fairly fair evaluation of it. I mean, apart from anything, unlike a lot of the more, shall we say, poorly informed takes that you'll see online, which tend to go with the whole, oh, you have to join us or scuttle, and they present it as essentially a binary choice that the British present, it does actually mention most of the options presented by the British, so it gives a much fairer assessment even in that small detail. And to be fair, it's not particularly, even for this publication, it's not particularly nice about Admiral John Soule, so I do approve of that. And then goes on to talk about the attack on Dakar. with Richelieu. Then you've got the Battle of Ko Chang over in French Indochina. And then you have the Battle of Casablanca, when the US Navy shows up during Operation Torch, and it covers various other minor engagements that the French Navy fights off Syria, Madagascar, etc. in the intervening period. There's a fairly extensive section about the Battle of Casablanca, and then, of course, you have the Germans invading Vichy, France, and the scuttling of the fleet at Toulon, which is obviously the kind of the end of the Vichy French Navy and the end of the majority of French flagships in World War II. Now, the only minor issue I would have with the book at this point is that there's not enough of it, basically, because during the period where the Vichy fleet is in operation, you have, as I said, a kind of a side parallel account of what the Free French forces are doing. So it kind of both sides, if you like, of the Marine Nationale at that point. But I know the book says it goes up to 1942. So yes, I understand why they're stopping at 1942, because that's what the title says. But I would much rather personally have seen this book extended by another 20 to 40 pages and become the French Navy 1939 to 1945, because of course, the Free French Navy, after 1942, gains a number of ships from the former Vichy French Navy and continues on to a number of major engagements, including, of course, supporting the liberation of France, both in Normandy and in the south of France. Richelieu goes on to operate with the Eastern Fleet. All of that is very interesting detail about what French ships did in the Second World War. And, you know, they're still under the French flag. So I think perhaps that should have been included. Maybe they're going to do a second volume that will cover kind of the reunified French forces. Who knows? If they are, then great, fantastic, and maybe you don't have to worry so much. But if this is as far as it goes, then I kind of would have wanted that. It does also point out that, you know, if they'd had a bit more time, maybe the Toulon fleet could have sailed out and joined the Allies instead. And then, of course, you've got a further reading section, being a slightly longer book, that is a slightly longer section, and a vassal index. So that's our three small books. As I said, there's a few minor issues personally as an historian from my perspective, but there's nothing in them that I can point and go, no, this is completely wrong. You are wrong, and this should not have been put there. Any variation is, as I said, well within the scope of professional discretion amongst historians interpreting the evidence, which you're always going to get. So that brings us on to our final and largest book, and perhaps I should start a subsidiary series of how good is a book as a melee weapon, because the warship series is one of the better melee weapons of choice in the book world, because it's good, solid, lightweight, so you don't have to swing it around like a phone book, and well, it's really nice and hard, good quality hard covering. But enough about that. So for those of you who don't know, the warship series has been going for, and let me just check on the library shelf there, probably since the late 1970s, I think. It's an annual. At one point was biannual, so it's published every 2 years, but since, again, check my shelf, since 2004, it has gone back to being published annually. And it's a collection of medium-length articles by various authors on specific subjects. And sometimes those authors presumably publish will send in a manuscript that's much longer, and the editor, who at the moment is John Jordan, presumably turns around and says, well, yeah, we'd love to have this content, but we can't, we can't fit it all in one volume. Otherwise, it's just going to be a book by one person. So you do get volumes over multiple years, and the articles are split over those years. So, and some of the authors in here you may have heard of before, one or two authors you've even seen on the channel before. So if I scroll through the 2026 edition, this is a version that I ordered and bought myself. So again, should be appearing on screen at the moment. The articles in this particular edition, we've got the high-speed destroyers of the Novik type, so that's Russian, part one. So presumably Warship 2027 will have part two. The Royal Navy fleet carries Second World War battle damage, so that's a standalone. The reconstruction of the battle fleet by battle fleet of the Imperial Japanese Navy between the wars, part two. So then you need to look at Warship 2025, part one. That's by Hans Lenger. And Hans Engre is one of, well, he's the surviving one, I think, or at least still publishing one, of a pair of authors who have done absolutely fantastic legwork in bringing to light interwar and wartime Japanese naval history in the English language. An awful lot of what I've talked about the Japanese Navy and what other people have talked about is heavily based on their work, because yeah, not so many of us speak Japanese. So in this particular one, he's talking about the reconstructions of Fusa, Issei, and Nagato in a huge amount of detail. You've also got the development of Japanese Japanese torpedoes. Don't scare the Russians, fleet, by mentioning those. The development of torpedo boats in the Imperial German Navy, part two. The Allies' emergency escort programs of summer 1942. The French 450-ton destroyers. Royal Danish Navy Vic-class inshore minesweepers. The capture of the Magdeburg's code books. That's the beginning of World War One. Cadet training ships of the Royal Navy. And the aircraft carrier Falco-Spaviero, The Real Story, by, again, Enrico Sanucci. So you're getting two appearances in this video, plus boats, reviews, and a gallery of photos. So definitely all of these articles are worth a read. I would specifically highlight the, there we go, page 30, Royal Navy fleet carriers, Second World War battle damage. It goes through every single carrier, every single time they suffered damage, and where at all possible, i.e. where ships survived, so that you could actually note all this down. It even breaks down the damage by hit. So, for example, when Illustrious is attacked at the beginning of 1941 by Fleet of War 10, she suffers a total of 6 hits plus some near misses, and they're all delineated what hit her and what the damage was. So, and it goes through. So if you want to know what the damage history of Royal Navy fleet carriers is, this is basically the best summary article you could hope for. There's also, following that, a rather interesting section about design considerations and lessons learned, which not only, obviously says, well, this is what the British learned from these experiences, but also why some of the things happened the way they did, as well as some rather interesting factoids which help explain why things happened the way that they did. So that's definitely worth looking through, and especially for things like the ships that are lost, like Ark Royal, goes into a lot of detail about exactly why that loss took place. Talks about the armoured carriers. Again, that the last little bit on the armoured carriers, I have a few disagreements on based on my own research, but again, much like a couple of the other mentions I've said before, it's not necessarily an invalid thing. It's not me turning around and saying, this is absolutely wrong, ignore this section. It's another view. It's not a view I agree with, but it is another view that I can see. Yeah, I can see why, based on the evidence, someone has come to that conclusion, as opposed to some other articles that you see online where I can just point to and say, no, you're absolutely wrong. Factually, I can prove this. So there's that. The reconstruction of the Battle of the Imperial Japanese Navy, that's always going to be a fairly popular one, but it is, again, superbly detailed. So you've got photos of Yamashiro, mid-reconstruction, little diagrams showing how the changes were made. So here's an example of the diagram of the changes to the protection of Issei. And it kind of goes on like that. Obviously, each one of these sections, if I just go through to, what one is this? The Allied Emergency Escort Programs of Summer 42. Each of them has their own little principal sources section and acknowledgements, and some of them also have very extensive endnotes. So that's that one. So rather than having all your bibliography at the back, each article has its own bibliography. There's so many really nice drawings. That bit's from the French 150-ton destroyers, just in case you're wondering. And then going through that, and then at the back you've got various book reviews. So if you want further reading on some of the articles, then of course you've got the actual the mini bibliographies for each one, but you also have a number of book reviews for other books. So just going through very quickly, stuff that might be interesting to viewers of this channel, you've got The Royal Navy and the Defence of Britain's Coast, 1900 to 1918 by Stephen R. Dunn. That's been reviewed. The British Hawkins Class Cruisers by Aidan Dodson, who also has an article in here. That's been reviewed. What else have we got? That's some small ones. Ian Johnston's The Count of Fairfield Shipyard, 1834 to 2024. That's definitely a good one. Ian Johnston does a superb series of books on the history of various British shipyards. You've got a review of Nicholas Jellicoe's War, which is a book that some viewers have asked me to look at before. And it goes on. There's a lot of different books reviewed there, which is quite nice. Got the Warship Gallery about the Scheldt this time, and that is that. So yeah, the Warship series, definitely worth picking up. Huge amount of good information in them. And yes, in case you're wondering, I do have every single one of them so far. So volumes 1 to 12, and then at that point they stopped calling them by volume number, and then it became 1989, all the way through to 2026. So that's my book reviews for this episode. If you have books that you would like me to review, either old books that you think, you know, what would Jack think about this book? Pop them in the comments below. Or if you know of a new history book coming out that you think, oh, maybe Jack should review this, then again, let me know and we'll see what we can do in reviewing those. I mean, as you can see behind me, I have, well, this is a small portion of the library. This is more primary sources and very old books. But over there, there's more books behind here. There's more books. Yeah, there's a lot more episodes where this is coming from. So with that said, thank you very much. And yeah. Just remember, if you want that World of Warships Cruisers book, link it in the comment below, and see you again in another video. Bye for now.